The Mike Lupica Podcast.
New York Daily News columnist and best-selling author.
Mike Lupica has covered just about every sport.
Candid interviews with legends he calls friends.
I was talking to Jordan about Woods after the basketball game the other night. Everybody in sports to be the next this guy, the next this guy. And Michael said, no, he's the first Tiger.
In your face questions.
How much of a dope is he?
Compelling.
A $1 billion industry, the biggest we've ever had in sports in this country, often comes down to a flip of the coin.
This is the Mike Lupica Podcast. Here's Mike Lupica.
Hello and welcome to the Mike Lupica Podcast. Today we'll be joined by a baseball legend. You may know him as Mr. October. He's Hall of Famer Reggie Jackson, and we'll talk with him momentarily. But first, this from Geico. When shopping for car insurance, consider this. Geico's been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to geico.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money. I first met Reggie Jackson after the Oakland A's when he came to the New York Yankees. And there were times during the 1977 season when everything had gotten sideways for him that I'd go pick him up at his apartment and we would drive to the ballpark together. In fact, Reggie, it's a route that I still use when I'm in the city up Madison Avenue because the kids would know what time you were coming and would wait on street corners to wave at the Rolls Royce.
Right. That was quite a bit of fun. Certainly the first year there was really difficult, which you experienced with me. I don't know if you lived in the city or not, but I know we had, you know, a bunch of times where, you know, we developed a friendship just through conversation of talking about things that we had in common. And, that friendship really kind of helped me because I didn't know very many people there. And, we talked about whatever and just kind of helped me express myself. And it wasn't that you were doing a story on Reggie Jackson every day. It was just that developed a relationship and I had a friend or somebody to share, you know, my thoughts with. I talked to my dad every day, talked to my brother every day. I talked to a guy named Gary Walker out of Arizona, all the time too. But, and I remember going up Madison Avenue and sometimes, I'm sure you had to be with me sometimes because I did it all the time. I would have my back seat loaded with Puma shoes.
Yes, I do remember.
Yeah, and we'd stand and hand those out. Kids would come by the car, and then they would put the top down, and they would say, don't bother the car, don't bother the car, don't touch the car, don't touch the car. But it was really cool.
And then that was the season. And people remember, obviously, as famous a night as there ever was in the World Series when you hit the three home runs against the Dodgers in Game 6. What not everybody remembers is it was really four home runs on four swings off four different pitchers going back to the game before.
Right. You know, on Sunday afternoon, I think we got beat 10-3, 10-4 or something. And in the ninth inning, Don Sutton was pitching a complete game, I believe. Well, he had to because he's a starter. And Munson homered. And I was next guy up, and I homered as well off the first pitch. And then the first pitch stuff started again after a base on balls in the stadium Tuesday night.
Reggie, there's so many things that I want to talk to you about your career. We obviously, more than 30 years ago, we worked together on your first autobiography. Can you describe what you are watching right now? As someone who was once an at-bat that made the ballpark come to a stop, or whether you're watching at home, it didn't matter, what is going on with this kid, Aaron Judge?
Yeah, it's exciting, I think, for everybody. I rode on the plane last night with the guys and had a chance to spend some time yesterday with Brian Cashman at the ballpark. And I watched the earlier game this year, this week. I think Monday's game I watched with Hal Steinbrenner. And, of course, talking to the players and coaches. And I'm very involved and really involved as much as I want to be. It's a great situation there for me. And everybody is really enjoying him. You know, there were questions about him as to whether he was too big or not good enough or athletic enough or whatever. But I think, you know, everybody, and I had people say to me, gosh, Reggie, you've really done a great job with Aaron Judge and stuff like that. It feels good. And I want to remind people and everybody that's listening that, you know, Aaron Judge is just a great character, great personality, just really a solid citizen. I don't really comparing players to other players. Sometimes I think it's unfair. I've talked about him, but they've asked me about him and Derek Jeter. This guy's a class act. He cares about teammates, cares about other people, not concerned about himself. And lets you talk to him about what's going on in his life. But our farm director Gary Denbo and our former hitting instructor, the minor league hitting coordinator James Rousen, and Tom Wilson, his coach, and Eduardo Gonzalez, his coach, first season that he played baseball down in Tampa. Marcus Timms, who's had him about 3 years now. He had him in the minors. Has him in the big leagues. It takes a lot of people to help a player. And there's no one individual responsible except him.
Right.
You know, all of the things that you tell a player and all the things that you try to show, et cetera. I can show him everything to do, and so can Marcus and, you know, some of the other staff people that we have, Alan Cockrell, heading coach. But he has to do it himself. And he's made those adjustments. And this is a meteoric rise, in with his success. And I don't like to say who is the last guy or this is like
right,
this guy or
right.
that guy. But my gosh, I remember I used to play with Ron Jackson, Papa Jack, when I played with him at the Angels. And he said, Reggie, the ballpark's too small for you. And this guy here, Yankee Stadium is too small for him.
Right.
He hits fly balls. He hits a big fly ball. That's an old term that was used, you know, that the old school guys used for home runs. I remember Joe Morgan, first time I heard him, he hits a big fly. And this guy hits a big fly ball that goes over the fence when it comes down. And it's wonderful to watch.
We're talking to Reggie Jackson, by the way, in Chicago. I think people around Wrigley Field may have to start thinking about boarding up some windows for this weekend series for the Yankees and the Cubs, don't you?
Well, it'll be fun. Right now he's the leader of the pack. He's the guy that draws all the attention. And it's fun to watch him. It's fun to see him. He's not nearly like watching Shaq. I'm good friends with Shaq, and I see him from place to place. And every time I see him, he's like King Kong. He could reach down with one hand and pull me up in the air. It's like seeing him. When you see Aaron, he's a big, good-looking, super build guy, and he's got a nice, quiet smile and a quiet gentleness about him. He's something to see, and he leads his Yankees in the air with. I think Sanchez is going to be here. Sanchez is going to be here in a couple of days. But Romine and Castro and Headley and Carpenter and the guy, Matt Guy, I was calling Matt Carpenter, Holiday and the guys that are coming in here, man. It's exciting right now. It really is.
You know, Reggie, you were the first person to talk to me about what it actually means to be a Yankee. And you always talked about you can do this and do that. But you got to be able to win those 11 games in October and November. Okay. You always talked about those 11 games. And for the first time in a while, I think Yankee fans are thinking, we're seeing something here that might not only win 11 games in October once, but might be able to do it more than once.
Well, you know, Aaron needs help. At the same time, you know, I want to say that, you know, Romine and Sanchez and the way Castro is playing and Didi Gregorius and the other players that we have here that are contributing and that have come through our minor league system, it's starting to manifest, but we need some time. We need to get an additional couple of pitchers, maybe three, whether you're talking about middle relief, and obviously we need a starter. That's not secret. That's not news to anybody. But we're heading in the right direction, and it's fun to see. I had one of the gentleman that runs our minor league staff, Gary Dembo, who's really helped turn our minor league system into what it is today, has great people down there. And, you know, I said to him, he said, Reggie, thanks for a great job. But I say, it's fun for me. I'm proud to be part of it. And that's what's cool.
We're talking to Reggie Jackson, who is obviously a member of the Baseball Hall of Fame. He's been my friend for 35 years or more. 563 home runs in the big leagues. And how do I put this to you? But you hit 563 when 563 mattered a lot more than it does now because of what's happened to the sport over the last 20 years.
Well, the steroids are certainly impacted the sport there for a while there during the 90s and early 2000s. And so some of the numbers are skewed, but there's still a great deal of respect for guys that have hit 400 home runs, 500 home runs. When you think about it, last night, Matt Holliday hit home run number 300. You know, that's 15 years with 20.
Right, right.
That's pretty good.
You know, I use you as a frame of reference all the time, and you always carried yourself like a big guy. You, to me, in memory, you were like a tight end, and now I see you at the batting cage with guys like Aaron Judge. Reggie, the sport in a lot of ways has grown a hell of a lot since you stopped playing 30 years ago.
I guess you can say that now. When you look at me now, you know, I played. I was 6'5". I've had two spinal surgeries, so I'm now 5'10". I played at 222, 223. I'm now 205, and I'm 70. But you know, the players like Sanchez, is 6'2", 6'2½, 225, 230. Big people. Aaron Hicks, you know, left him out. You know, our switch hitting outfielder there. That, you know, who knows? He might steal a job here in the next few weeks. He's a big kid, a 6'1", 6'2", 215. You know, so when you take a look at the players, and you take a look at Pineda and Dylan Betances, and the guys that are they're big people, and I just enjoy seeing it and being around them, and I'm happy for them all. And for us as Yankee fans.
We're talking to the great Reggie Jackson, one of the great winners in baseball history. Reggie, you know, the thing, we've talked about this for a long time. We talked about it in your book. One thing that you did, and I mean, it's you know, you look back now at what ballplayers are making. You shocked the world when you got, what, $3 million for 5 years from George Steinbrenner 40 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
But you knew when you signed that contract at that time that you weren't just taking the man's money. You were accepting the responsibility of the stage, the team, and the challenge of putting the Yankees back on top. They had made the World Series in 1976, gotten swept by the Reds, and then, you know, I use this line about you the way people used to, Bill Russell once used about our friend Joe Morgan. Isn't it funny how good teams always seem to follow you around?
Well, I was bragging to somebody the other day. I have a godson that's a heck of a basketball player, and he's going around the country, 17 years old, and he's playing in travel basketball, I guess. And he wins everywhere he goes. Just a great kid, great person, great talent, 6'6", 17-year-old, about 230. You look at Derek Jeter, and you don't see spectacular arm, spectacular power, You see a great player, although you don't see anything great. It's just he is a great player. For 8 to 10 years there in the league, he was the guy that everybody wanted to play with. And he stepped on the field, and his presence, the way he went about it, turned him into a superstar. And, you know, one of the great players of, certainly one of the great players of his era, and one of the great players in the history of the game. It's really not all about being spectacular. It's about being consistent, and about having a focus and having the direction to know how to go about it.
We're talking to Reggie Jackson on the Mike Lubica podcast, but before we continue with Reggie, I got to tell you about Helix. One size fits all never really fits, right? So then why is your mattress one size fits all? Well, because a truly customized mattress will cost you $5,000 to $10,000 until now. You have to check out Helix.com. Here's what I want you to do. Go to HelixSleep.com, answer a few simple questions, and they'll run a 3D biomechanical model of your body, resulting in an optimized mattress that's completely custom to your needs. It will also be the most comfortable mattress you've ever slept on. They can even customize each side of the mattress for couples. Your mattress arrives at your door in about a week, and shipping is completely free. And here's my favorite part. You have 100 nights to try it out. And if you don't love it, they'll pick it up for free and give you a full refund. No questions asked. Go to HelixSleep.com/Mike and get $50 off your order right now. That's HelixSleep.com/Mike for $50 off. HelixSleep.com/Mike. We're talking to Reggie Jackson. There's so many stories that I remember. I remember remember the strike. What was it? The strike year in 1981, and you had to play a series against the Milwaukee Brewers. And it was during that series that you said to people one night at the batting cage, I think it was before Game 5. I guess we're going to find out tonight just how much of that Mr. October shit is really true. And you hit one off of Moose Haas off the facing of the upper deck. And the next day we're sitting around your locker. And I said, by the way, I was watching you around the bases. After the ball hit the facing, where did it land? And you looked up and you smiled and you said, second effing base.
I do remember that. It was fun. And, you know, I had this group. There was a group of writers like yourself and Dave Anderson, Ira Brokaw, and Jim Murray, and Murray Chass, and guys like that that I shared a lot of time with and enjoyed conversations. Steve Jacobson and Bob Ryan from Boston, and Frank Dolson from
Philly, yeah.
And just enjoyed the conversations of having fun and not necessarily talking trash among the guys. That stuff didn't get out in the newspaper, but it was fun.
Reggie, when you look back, especially with all of the drama with Billy and George and everything that happened in 77 and 78, you know, and you had come from the Oakland A's who had won 3 World Series in a row. But boy, that 77-78 team, for all of your home runs and all the stuff that went on, man, it just seems to me you guys won a lot of games, 3-2 and 4-3. It was, for whatever drama was going on in the clubhouse, that was one of the great professional teams I've ever seen.
Well, I agree with you. And look at the players that we had. You know, we had a great defender and a heck of a hitter, as well as a clutch hitter, the guy that played first base, Chambliss. The second baseman, Willie Randolph, was, you know, an all-star 7, 8, 10 times, hit 300, 290, 280, and knew how to get on base, knew how to steal a base when it counted. His shortstop, Bucky Dent, not spectacular, but never made a bobble, got some big hits when it was necessary. Greg Nettles hit 400 home runs.
Yep.
This guy won 8, 9 gold gloves at least, and was really the premier defensive third baseman or at least in the class of Mike Schmidt, when he was, you know, playing third base. Pinella and Roy White that played left field, two outstanding players. Mickey Rivers, you know, an all-star a couple of times. I played right field. And Thurman Munson, if he'd have, you know, lived another 5, 6, 7 years, probably would have wound up in the Hall of Fame. And during that time, we had Gossage and Lyle. Lyle was there in 1977. He won the Cy Young Award.
Yep, yep.
And Goot come over there, and we traded Sparky to Texas, I believe. But if we'd have kept Sparky, man, we might have won 4 out of 5 years there.
It was some team, and you're right, it had incredible balance, lefty, righty, just enough speed, just enough starting pitching, just enough bullpen. And it provided one of the most exciting days that I've ever had as a journalist. That comeback in 78 that was finally capped on October 2nd, 1978, in what is known as the Bucky Dent game. Another footnote to your career is, who knocked in the winning run in that game?
Well, I hit a home run in the eighth inning, and yep. I want to say the score was,
I think it made it 5-2. We both might be wrong, but I think it put you up 3 at the time.
Yes, yes, yes. Put us up 3, and then, of course, we won the game 5-4. So, you know, because of good players and things like that, and again, I'll say it's very similar as to what's going on now and really any other team. When you've got a lot of good players around, then you have opportunities where one hit, a home run, 3 strikeouts in the ninth by a reliever can make you a star.
You know, as complicated as your relationship was with George while you were a Yankee and even after you were a Yankee, and you've not only spoken about this with me, but spoken about it pretty emotionally. It was tremendously important that in the last years of his life, especially, that not only did he lean on you, but you probably were closer to him than at any other time in all the years that you'd known him.
That's very true. You know, I really always, I don't know how you say this without sending the wrong message, but I'd always thought about players like Roger Staubach and the great head coach there. I can't think of his name right now.
Tom Landry. Tom Landry.
You know, I've thought about Joe Green and Chuck Knoll. I thought about Bart Starr as well as Vince Lombardi. You know, I've thought about Jordan and Jackson.
Yep.
Arbonk and Bill Russell. And I just wanted to look at our relationship that way as one that was special and that people would have good memories about. As I had appreciated the relationship and appreciated the opportunity to be close to him and appreciated the opportunity to be his partner in crime, if you will. There's a picture of he and I sitting in Tampa in a stands together, and I've got my uniform on, and he's sitting there next to me in those, you know, those pilot glasses that he wore.
Yep.
And the navy blue jacket. And there's a caption underneath it that says, "This pair beats 3 of a kind."
We're talking to Reggie Jackson. And now, you know, and friends of his for years have called him Buck. Reggie, you've gotten close with the Suns now and the family as the Yankees have gone into the next generation without George.
I enjoy spending time with Hal, Jenny, Jesse. Hank, often I'm probably one of the people associated with the organization that sees Hank several times a year. I talk to him on the phone and stay in touch. And it's very comfortable for me to talk to Hal about the way that things are going and with the organization. I remember 4 or 5 years ago, we were standing watching TV, and he had been at the helm for 2 to 3 years. And we were watching the opening day and standing there alone, and I said the suite was full of people, And I said, I just want to say, I think you're doing a great job. And he turned around and kind of leaned back and he says, really? You really think so? And it was such a nice moment.
Yeah.
That I really appreciated that, the friendship, the relationship, you know, came through. And so I got great respect for them and, you know, nothing I'd ever do to embarrass them. I just am full of appreciation for my relationship there with the Yankees.
You know, I was reading back on you today, and you know, I'm always finding out stuff I didn't know, even though we did do your book together. I did not know. We never talked about this. When you got to the Yankees, long before they had retired number 42 in baseball, you requested 42.
That's correct. That's correct. I was going to wear the number in spring training and wear it in his honor, but I was worried that I wouldn't measure up. That's the truth. I was worried that I wouldn't measure up. And so I wore number 44 in admiration of Henry Aaron and Willie McCovey.
563 home runs in the big leagues, more than 2,500 hits, 1,700 RBIs. And I, knowing you as well as I do, there is one thing that always chafed you because you came so close with the Angels a couple of times and didn't win at all.
Yeah, you know, I really thought we had a couple of times there to win the championship. It didn't, certainly against Milwaukee and certainly against Boston. We were leading, you know, we were up in both of those series and wound up losing. So I've always kind of thought that, you know, we had failed. I had failed there in that last part of my career. I should have made the World Series two more times.
Yep. You were up 2-0 on Milwaukee that year in a 5-game series. And then, you know, then you lose game six, an epic game six to the Red Sox in 86 with Dave Henderson's home run. Talk about when you came back to the stadium as a Yankee and hit that home run that night in the rain.
You know, I was really sad to have left the Yankees. And I felt like, I got pushed out. There were a couple people that had mentioned to me that a guy named Charlie Lau, bless his soul, had said, you know, I just think Reggie is a little too muscular and he's going to go down fast. And, yeah. And I had had an odd year that year. I had a terrible first half. And then in the second half, I came back and hit 280 the second half, but I'd hit 199 or something like that the first half. And, you know, I remember coming back. I was really disappointed. I got teared up and cried when I left. And then I was turned down to come back with the Yankees. But when we came back to the stadium, I was struggling. I was not hitting. I had not gotten off to a good start, in Anaheim, and it was a little bit drizzly, et cetera. And on top of it all, Ron Guidry, one of the best left hitters in the game, and right, one of my big buddies when I was with the Yankees, Gator was pitching, and I wanted to face him like I wanted a case of poison ivy. the manager, Gene Mock, said to me, he said, Reggie, I know you're struggling. We're going back to New York. He said, but I know you wouldn't want to miss this game for anything. And I knew Guidry was pitching. Now I looked at him and I wanted to say, "Are you kidding me? I don't need to play. You can put me on the bench tonight."
Yeah.
But you know, I got in the game, and the thing about it was a little bit of a drizzle, and George had taken some abuse about trading me, and he sat right next to the dugout in a raincoat and was watching a game with a couple of people, and The first time up, I'll never forget it. Guidry threw me a high slider, and I think I rolled a base hit through the middle. And then the next time up, he threw me a fastball. I popped it up, and I went back to the dugout, and then out in the right field after I'd made the out, and I said, "Boy, I found a little something. I feel pretty good," because he was so good. Ronnie was that. You had to bear down and get anything else out of your mind. So the fact that his greatness made me focus on, you know, trying to do the right things. And next time up, he hung another slider boy, and I hit one as good as I could hit it out up off the facing of the upper deck there in right field. And then the stadium stood up, cheered me, and started saying, "Steinbrenner sucks." And that was, I don't know whether I laughed about it or anything, but I did feel good that I had gotten back on track, showed people that I could still play. And at the end of the game, I was coming out of the elevator there, and Fran Healy was waiting outside. And I started out, and both elevators came up at the same time, and George was on one, and I was in the other. And I got out, and Fran said, "You know, Reggie, George was on the elevator right next to you, and he started out and saw you, and he stepped back in."
Oh, I remember that night. I think he had gone up to his box by the time he hit the home run, and all the Yankee fans turned as they were chanting and pointed up at the box as they did. We're talking to the great Reggie Jackson. You know, there's so many things that I remember about your time with the Yankees. How about Game 5 against the Royals? You bring up Fran Healy. When Fran Healy had to tell you that you weren't in the lineup that night, in a deciding game.
You're talking about Game 5 in Kansas City?
Yeah, the Splittorf, I think, was the starting pitcher that night. And that was the excuse Billy used for not starting you because he's a left-hander.
Just crazy. I think I hit my first home run with the Yankees in 77 off of Paul Splittorf in Kansas City that year.
Right.
And I remember Gene Michael was there at the game, and I think Gene was our first base coach at the time, and Billy called him in and said, "I want you to tell Reggie he's not playing." And Gene said, "Screw you, you tell him. I'm not playing."
Yeah.
So then they got Fran Healy to come tell me. He called Fran in and said, "Tell Reggie he's not playing." And so, Fran came and told me, and with all of that, he said to me, he said, "Whatever you do, don't sulk, go out, take your batting practice, be on the bench on time when the game starts, be there for the national anthem, do the things you need to do because the camera will be on you and they'll either try to get you sulking or something." So, he was a real guiding light during, all of the times that I was struggling with Billy and the Yankees. And I remember when he was going to get released or traded, and I went to George and I said, "George, if Fran is going to not be around, I wish you could do something to keep him." And Fran became a radio broadcaster for us. That's how that happened. That's how Fran, still one of my dear friends, that's how he got into broadcasting.
He's one of the stand-up guys, and I know how important he was off the field to you when you were a Yankee. Talk a little bit about the comeback in 78. After all the drama with Billy and oh my God, when they did the shot and after he pulled you from the field, when I saw you take off your glasses that day, I said, "Oh God, this cannot end well." And then Bob Lemon becomes the manager of the team. And I was telling Ronnie Darling not long ago, one of my favorite lines from Lem was they asked him what the secret to his success was down the stretch in 78. And he said, "Oh, I just got the pitching straightened out and hope Reggie hit."
I never really understood that blame for loafing on the ball. And he was going to show me out and show me up. And it was kind of weird because between Mike Torres and Fran Healy and all the stories that went around, he went to the mound and told Mike Torres and Thurman Munson, "Watch this."
Oh, jeez. I didn't know that.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, that, you know, came back to me a few years ago. And all of a sudden, this Paul Blair starts heading onto the field. Jim Rice had hit a lazy fly ball to right field. I was playing him deep. and the swing looked like he had hit the ball well, but he hadn't. I backed up on the ball and then knew I wasn't going to catch it, and I kind of ran in, corralled the ball, threw the ball second base. I had misplayed the ball. If you just looked at it, you say, gosh, how do you misplay that? Because I was fooled by the swing. And so as I came in, Blair came out to get me. He had a smirk on his face, and I didn't know what was going on. So I just went into the dugout, and I was met as Billy's standing there or waiting for me to come in. And I was just like appalled. I didn't really know. Well, I was not embarrassed, even as I look back now. I never really was embarrassed. I just was like, what's happened? What's wrong with you? What did I do? And then he went into a rage, and I was completely calm because I never really got what the anger was about. It was something that was pent up with him, and so he wanted to show me up, if you will. And I never really felt like he showed me up. I never got it. I thought it was crazy. His rant and his aggression in the dugout of wanting to charge me and being held by other people. It was like, what are you doing? I mean, if you're going to attack me, and what are you going to do when you get to me? I'm 30 years old, 200 pounds. What are you going to do? And so I took my glasses off because he had a reputation of hitting people first.
Yes, so he did.
Took the glasses off and sat him down and just kind of looked at him and watched him. And finally, I just turned away. But I never made any motions or I never got aggressive toward him. It never made sense to me. I turned and walked away, and I made one comment to him. Is that, you know, if you going to try to kick my butt, then it's all that alcohol you've been drinking must have went to your brain. And I turned and walked away, and I sat in the clubhouse for a good 45 minutes to an hour. And Bucky Dent was in there, and he had gotten pinch hit for in his second or third inning, and he was raging mad. And I just sat there confused, and they said, well, let me wait for this guy until the game's over and see what the deal is. Evidently, he wants to whip my butt or something, and I never thought that would get there. But Fran Healy comes in from the bullpen and begged me to leave. Get dressed. Something might happen. If you hit him, you will regret it the rest of your career. It'll hang on you forever. You got to go home. Whether you're right or wrong, doesn't matter. Get out of here so nothing happens. And finally, in like the top of the ninth inning, I never showered. I got dressed in my street clothes and walked back to the Sheridan.
It's not a long walk, but there was no team bus for you that day. You just, and what you always told me was you used that time to calm down and clear your head.
Yeah, I just, you know, walked back the whole way. I don't remember seeing anybody or any people. I was not really recognized. And it was maybe a 15-minute walk, 20-minute walk back to the Sheraton. And I went to my room, and then all hell broke loose with the media wanting to talk to me and this and that. And then all the stories of whatever went down.
And then after all of that, okay, when the team is in disarray and Billy's gone, you guys pull off as famous a comeback over a couple of months. You were down 14 games to the Red Sox and not only come back, beat them in a playoff game, end up winning it all. It for all of the satisfaction of the way 1977 ended, there had to be just as much satisfaction over that comeback in 78.
I think absolutely. I remember sitting in the clubhouse with Lou Piniella, and I think we swept the Red Sox four straight.
The Boston Massacre. Yeah, in September, the Boston Massacre.
Yes, yeah, we beat them like scored like 50 runs. They scored like maybe 10 or 12. And I was sitting next to Lou Piniella at our lockers. And I said, it was the first week in September. And I said, man, we're in first place. What do we do now?
Yeah.
Because we caught him. And Lou said, just keep winning.
He was one of the great winners on that team. I remember after the playoff game in 78, and you remember, a lot of crazy things happened that day, including Lou lost a ball in the sun and put his arms out in distress. I think Remy might have hit it, and it ended up in his glove. And also in that game, Reggie, you remember this one? He made a running catch on Fred Lynn towards the line that Lou couldn't make that would have broken the game open.
Yes, yeah. It was he made it raining with his arms out toward the foul line, right near the wall, in a basket catch.
Yep.
Yeah, which he made two great plays that day that helped us win that game.
And you know, after the game, he's sitting in front of his locker, as you know, cigarette in one hand, beer in the other, and I'm talking about those plays and how crazy they were, and how the Red Sox were doing a lot of what-ifing at the other end of the hall, and he looked up and he smiled and he said, hey, we're not the world champs for nothing. That was his whole explanation of what had happened that day.
There you go. Awesome.
Reggie, when you look back, your life would have been, for all of the winning you did in Oakland, the Yankees, as crazy and controversial as it turned out to be, the Yankees and you, in an odd way, turned out to be a perfect fit, which is one of the reasons why I believe the relationship continues to this day.
Wow. I never really thought about it that way. Certainly it worked out great. And I enjoy being, with the Yankees and having the association, that where I'm associated with that brand and their history and the city and the fans and all the writers and all the people that I see from time to time. It's certainly something that I do enjoy being part of my life.
We'll have more with Reggie Jackson after this from ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? Posting your job in one place isn't enough to find all the quality candidates. If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your job on all the top job sites. And now you can. With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post your job to 100+ job sites, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, all with a single click. Find candidates in any city or industry nationwide. Just post once and watch your qualified candidates roll into ZipRecruiter's easy way to use interface. No juggling emails or calls to the office. Quickly screen candidates, rate them, and hire the right person first. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by Fortune 100 companies and thousands of small and medium-sized businesses. And right now, my listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/Lupica. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Lupica. One more time, to try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/Lupica. When you look at the game now, and I've been talking about this for a year or so, Reggie, it seems to me there's as much young talent in this sport across the board right now, kids under the age of 26 and 25, as I can ever remember. Am I overstating this?
I don't know. I think I'd want you to name some of them.
Machado, Harper, Trout, Lindor, Altuve, all the other kids in Houston, Stanton, now Judge and Sanchez. It seems like everybody's got somebody.
Well, you got Arnaud. How do you pronounce his name in Colorado?
Oh, Arenado. Oh my goodness. And how about the kid the kid Betts in Boston?
Yes. Well, they've got a couple guys in they've got Betts. Mookie Betts, and then there's
Bogarts at short.
Yes, you got those two players, and then there's a White Sox player that's got some power.
After your baseball life, and a baseball life, by the way, that could easily have been a football life. I mean, it's another part of your bio that, you know, maybe you and I only care about and remember. You played for Frank Cush at Arizona State.
Yes. He's like playing for Belichick, to give a comparison, or Chuck Knoll or someone like that. But proud of my roots in Arizona at Arizona State, and proud to have been a football player. Frank Cush is still alive.
I did not know that. Oh, my goodness. I'm glad I didn't talk about him in the past tense. Is your relationship, I've kept you longer than I said. You guys got in at 3 o'clock from New York to Chicago last night, so I'll try to wrap this up, even though we could do 2 hours. Okay. Is your involvement with the Yankees right now, because I know as well as anybody all the baseball you have in you, and part of the fun of doing that book that time was having you go player by player on the A's and talk about their strengths and weaknesses. It's a long way around for me to ask you, is your relationship with the Yankees enough of a baseball fix for you at this point in your life?
Well, that's a good question. I didn't expect that one. I believe if I had a greater involvement and could get closer to home, you know, I would consider getting back closer to home. I'd like to be a little more involved in the makeup, in what the franchise does, on the business side as well as the baseball side. I'm not searching for a job, if you will, but certainly a small piece of equity would be extremely interesting. Right now, I travel quite a bit, a little bit more than I like, but I have great appreciation for the Yankees, and that relationship is extremely important to me. The Steinbrenner family is paramount to me in reference for relationships, and so it takes a whole lot to pry me away from the Yankees, because it's like second home for me.
When you look back, do you remember the World Series with the A's better or the Yankees better? Or is that like me saying to somebody, which one of your children do you like the best?
It's like saying, which one of your kids is your favorite?
Right. Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah, they are both very special to me, both very special places. I walk in that Oakland ballpark, and I certainly feel at home, and I feel just as much at home when I'm in Yankee Stadium.
Well, as I said, they did a. By the way, how'd you like that Fox documentary? I thought it was terrific that Bruce Kornblatt did, and he interviewed me for it, and obviously a lot of other people. Were you happy with it?
I thought it was very good. I appreciated it. I appreciated the presentation that Fox put forth. They allowed me to have quite a bit of input, and it's kind of the something that made me feel real good. I like the way it was presented. I'd always had trouble with how I was presented in the Bronx is Burning on the ESPN miniseries. It really kind of broke my heart. But I'm really glad that Fox, showed a different side of it and gave me the opportunity to present myself in a different, in a better way.
Well, as I said to the interviewer in that documentary, I said, you guys can say anything you want to about this guy, but I said, the SOB always did find out a way to win the game. Again, we could have gone on for 2 hours today. I know I woke you up to do this, but my friend, it's been fun knowing you, and I'm certainly glad this friendship continues.
Hey, it always will. Appreciate you, Mike.
Mr. October, Reggie Jackson, this is the kind of conversation we have every week on this podcast. Subscribe to it, download it, leave some reader comments, and we'll talk to you next week, everybody.
The Mike Lupica podcast is produced and distributed by Compass Media Networks in conjunction with Hiltzik Creative. For iPhone users, go to the podcast app and search the Mike Lupica podcast. Click on the Mike Lupica podcast icon and subscribe. For non-iPhone users, you can listen on Google Play Music, TuneIn, Stitcher, or your preferred podcast platform.